This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
Welcome to your Sunday liturgy. This is the program that accompanies you as you prepare for the Sunday Eucharistic celebration. After the Sunday liturgy, you can listen to our bulletin of church news that will be followed by Panorama. Then, our feature, The World Around Us, with news about our environment. I'm Father Paul Samasumo. In the Old Testament, we read about the prophets. A prophet is not someone who just foretells the future. He's not a fortune teller. As Christians, we too are called to be prophets. Our prophetic calling, however, is to help others listen to the good news of Christ and then help them to align their lives to the message of Christ.
Sunday in Ordinary Time.
A reading from the book of the prophet Ezekiel. As the Lord spoke to me, the Spirit entered into me and set me on my feet, and I heard the one who was speaking say to me, Son of man, I am sending you to the Israelites, rebels who have rebelled against me. They and their ancestors have revolted against me to this very day. Hard of face and obstinate of heart are they to whom I am sending you. But you shall say to them, Thus says the Lord God. And whether they heed or resist, for they are a rebellious house, they shall know that a prophet has been among them. The word of the Lord.
Our
A reading from the second letter of St. Paul to the Corinthians. Brothers and sisters, that I, Paul, might not become too elated because of the abundance of the revelations, a thorn in the flesh was given to me, an angel of Satan, to beat me, to keep me from being too elated. 3 times I begged the Lord about this, that it might leave me. But he said to me, My grace is sufficient for you, for power is made perfect in weakness. I will rather boast most gladly of my weaknesses, in order that the power of Christ may dwell with me. Therefore I am content with weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, and constraints for the sake of Christ. For when I am weak, then I am strong. The Word of the Lord.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark. Jesus departed from there and came to his native place, accompanied by his disciples. When the Sabbath came, he began to teach in the synagogue, and many who heard him were astonished. They said, Where did this man get all this? What kind of wisdom has been given him? What mighty deeds are wrought by his hands? Is he not the carpenter, the son of Mary, and the brother of James and Joseph and Judas and Simon? And are not his sisters here with us? And they took offense at him. Jesus said to them, A prophet is not without honor, except in his native place, and among his own kin, and in his own house. So he was not able to perform any mighty deed there, apart from curing a few sick people by laying his hands on them. He was amazed at their lack of faith. The Gospel of the Lord.
And now with this week's Sunday Liturgy Reflection, here is Father Enobong.
The messengers of God cannot be said to be perfect or the best of people. Most times, they have been chosen from those written of by society as good for nothing. Looking through the history of salvation, God has always used those considered the least in human standard and reckoning to accomplish his plans. Often, they were not the best intellectuals, not the best economically, not the best in terms of lifestyles, but before God, they were his best. In the first reading from the book of prophet Ezekiel chapter 2, God called the prophet and gave him his spirit, then commissioned him to go to the household of Israel. His duty was to speak in the name of God. Whether they listened to him or not, he was to do his duty as a prophet. Not that he was the best among his brethren, but God needed him to be his mouthpiece. Jesus did the same when he chose his 12 disciples. He did not choose from among the best in human reckoning. He chose the common Galilean fishermen, and by the world standard, they were considered to be nothing. They became the champions of the good news of our salvation. And for those who have been written off by people as useless and worthless, here is the good news for you. God made you unique. Even in your weakness, you have something good to offer. The key word is always trust in God, who chose the weak to shame the strong. May the message of Christ in all its richness continue to find a home in our hearts. Through the same Christ, our Lord. Amen. Peace be with you.
Hilary Munyaneza, Father Enobong Odaidion contributed to the program. I'm Father Paul Samasumo. Do stay tuned in to our bulletin of church news and later the world around us, all about our environment. Yeah.
Festus Tarawali, Pope Francis will undertake a one-day pastoral visit to the city of Trieste in northern Italy on Sunday, the 7th of July, on the occasion of the conclusion of the 50th Italian Catholic Social Week. The 3rd to the 7th July event is promoted by the Italian Bishops' Conference to deepen and relaunch the Christian social message and guide the action of believers in the various categories of the world of work. The meeting is dedicated this year to the theme, At the Heart of Democracy, Participation Throughout History and Into the Future. In view of the visit, the newspaper Il Piccolo has made available a previously unpublished text by Pope Francis entitled At the Heart of Democracy. The text to be distributed during the Pope's visit on Sunday is in the form of an introduction to a collection of papal speeches and messages. For more on the Pope's thoughts, visit our web portal vaticannews.va/en. The Vatican on Friday released the complete schedule of Pope Francis' apostolic trip to Indonesia, East Timor, Papua New Guinea and Singapore in September. Departing from Rome on the 2nd of September, the Pope will first make his way to Indonesia, landing in the capital Jakarta. Then on the 6th of September, he will travel to Port Moresby to greet the faithful of the Pacific Island nation of Papua New Guinea, where he will remain until the 9th of September. From there, the Holy Father will fly to Dili, the capital of Timor Leste or East Timor. From Dili, he will travel to Singapore from the 11th to the 13th of September for the final leg of his journey. While in Indonesia, the Pope will preside at an interreligious meeting in a mosque in the world's largest predominantly Muslim country. The Holy Father is also expected to walk through a tunnel called the Tunnel of Friendship in Jakarta, connecting the Grand Istiqlal Mosque to the Our Lady of the Assumption Cathedral, which was built by Indonesian authorities in 2020. The full itinerary of the apostolic visit can also be found on our web portal, vaticannews.va. In more news from the Vatican, Pope Francis is urging young people in Romania to be bearers of hope and builders of bridges, using every tool at their disposal to sow goodness and love in the world. The Pope's words came in an open letter addressed to the young people of the country's Roman Catholic Diocese of Iași. It was in response to a letter delivered to him by Vatican Secretary of State Cardinal Pietro Parolin, who participated in the diocesan youth meeting in Iași in May. In the letter published by the diocese, the Holy Father also encourages the youth to use social networks with courage and creativity, conveying values that build up friendship, peace, dialogue between ethnicities and cultures, family and Christian values. The Pope warns them against becoming slaves to their smartphones and ending up trapped in virtual life at the expense of real life. Go out into the world, meet people, listen to their stories, look into the eyes of your brothers and sisters. True wealth, said the Pope, lies in the human relationships lived daily in direct and sincere contact. In conclusion, the Pope invites the young Catholics of Romania to participate in the National Youth Meeting, which will be held in September in the country's Brașov district. And now to Southern Africa, where the first workshop on psycho-spiritual counseling for newly ordained bishops has been hailed as a success by participants. Organized by the Interregional Meeting of the Bishops of Southern Africa, IMBISA, the five-day workshop under the theme Enhancing Psycho-Spiritual Counseling in the IMBISA region held in Pretoria saw the participation of newly ordained bishops from the six episcopal conferences that constitute the regional body. Using the Conversation in the Spirit methodology, the newly ordained bishops reflected on psychosocial care in consecrated life, the importance of mental health among priests, trauma in ministry, as well as spiritual well-being and self-care. In an interview with the Southern African Catholic Bishops' Conference Communication Office, the participants said they are grateful for the opportunity to meet as young bishops to address issues related to their well-being. Let us listen to two of the bishops, Vicar Apostolic of Ingwamvuma in South Africa, Bishop Vuzumuzi Francis Mazibuko, and the Auxiliary Bishop of the Metropolitan Archdiocese of Pretoria, Bishop Mazilo John Selemela.
So far, I'm learning that we actually need to take care of ourselves as well, to be able to take care of others in this regard. As bishops, we are human beings like all others. And sometimes we forget that, I think, and we just keep on working and working. And we expect the same also from other people that we work with or other priests that we work with. So what I'm learning here is that we need to take care of ourselves and also take care of others and not be shy of looking for help if we find that we do need that kind of a help.
Oh, my name is Bishop Masilo, Auxiliary Bishop of Pretoria. What brought me here today is the course, you know, on the psycho-spiritual formation, which we are doing as bishops who are recently ordained in the Imbisa Conference. It is a process that we have just begun, but I think it is intended at helping us discover who we are, what resources we possess within ourselves in order to effectively minister to people. So we began this morning by looking at the self, who we are in terms of our relationship with the kind of the ministry that we do, and with particular attention to the negative things that can affect us ministerially. One of the things was, you know, to guard against issues like burnout, overwork, stress and exhaustion in, you know, the ministry. And that related to me also personally, because as a bishop, one lives alone. One works most of the time. And one rarely also finds time to rest, even if God himself rested after the seventh day of creating the world. And so this is a challenge to myself and perhaps even many of us who are here as bishops, to identify forums and ways that we can find rest, but also to identify when there are challenges in our own ministerial life that demands of us to be able to identify fatigue, and then also to find support, you know, either through structures that are available, through people, and through meaningful relationships that would enable us somehow to take stock, take it easy, relax, and recharge batteries.
The voices of Bishop Vuzumuzi Francis Mazibuko of Ingwamvuma in South Africa and the Auxiliary Bishop of the Metropolitan Archdiocese of Pretoria, Bishop Masilo John Selemela. You are tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
The leaders of the military juntas in Mali, Burkina Faso and Niger held their first ever joint summit on Saturday in Niger's capital, Niamey. The meeting of the leaders of the Alliance of Sahel States, a bloc that was set up in September, came a day before the summit of leaders of the Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS, in Nigeria. In January, the three countries announced they are leaving the regional bloc. In a joint statement that was read out on state broadcasters in the three countries, they said ECOWAS had drifted from the ideals of its founding fathers and the spirit of Pan-Africanism. Meanwhile, the U.S. military is set to complete the withdrawal of all U.S. personnel from Niger's Air Base 101 in the nation's capital, Niamey, this weekend. The fewer than 500 remaining troops will leave a critical drone base in the West African country in August, ahead of a 15 September deadline set in an agreement with the new ruling junta in Niger, the American commander in the country said on Friday. In April, the military junta ordered the U.S. to withdraw its nearly 1,000 military personnel from the country. Until a coup last year, Niger had been a key partner in Washington's fight against insurgents in the Sahel region of Africa. A top independent rights expert has warned that insecurity remains widespread in Burundi and that human rights crimes have gone unpunished. Addressing the UN Human Rights Council this week, Special Rapporteur Fortuné Gaëtan Zongo criticized the alleged tolerance for human rights violations committed by different state-affiliated actors in Burundi. The perpetrators of the violations include the ruling party's youth militia, known as the Imbonerakure, along with the police and National Intelligence Service. Mr. Zongo noted that the state had allowed them to operate with impunity and terrorize people with arbitrary arrests, enforced disappearances, and spreading intimidation across the Central African nation. You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio. Hello and welcome to the World Around Us, news about our environment. I am Festus Tarawali. Some 3.2 billion people, or almost one-third of the global population, are affected by desertification and land loss. That's according to Ibrahim Thiaw, the UN's most senior official dealing with the issue. The loss of land through drought and desertification, which has been driven in part by climate change, can have huge impacts on agriculture, development, migration, and national and regional economies, and sometimes leads to conflict. The Executive Secretary of the UN Convention to Combat Desertification spoke about these issues in an interview with UN News' Matt Wells.
Desertification is happening at the local level as much as it is global. Unless we address this at the local level, we will never be able to actually control the whole thing at the global level. So you will need global policies, you will need global decisions. The impacts are huge in terms of food security and food sovereignty, for that matter, and in terms of forced migration, when people have to flee whenever there is no opportunity for them anymore to produce, like you have the situation in the Sahel, or in Haiti, or in other parts of the world. Land degradation and droughts have severe consequences on global security. When people fight for the little land and the little piece of water left, so conflicts over access to land and water are growing all over the place, which is having severe consequences on the homogeneity of these communities. It's also having a severe consequence on our economy. Now, it is estimated that up to 50% of the global GDP might be affected or lost by 2050 unless we address the issue of land loss and desertification, which is understandable. When you affect agriculture and food production, you affect the economy of the world.
What is the trend right now in terms of land loss?
Land loss is happening all over the world, and land degradation, be it in arid lands or in less arid lands. But in terms of dry lands and desertification, it is estimated that 45% of the land surface is affected by desertification. Maybe it is more striking to say that 3.2 billion people are affected by that. So it's one-third of the world population that is actually affected by land loss. We need first to halt land degradation, but we also need to restore 1.5 billion hectares of land.
How are you going to do that?
By improving the techniques of agriculture, reducing the impact we are having on land in terms of extraction of minerals and other extractive industries. It is also important that we reduce the pressure in terms of human activities in some parts of the world so as to diversify the economy and create more opportunities to create income rather than just coming back to the same degraded land again. But it is also important to restore. It is not an expensive activity to undertake, but it is absolutely essential to provide more food security, to reduce conflicts. Every single dollar invested in land restoration can generate up to $30 of economy. So it is therefore quite profitable from the economic point of view to invest. Now, this is not only for local communities or for governments. It is essentially for the private sector, because the largest driver of land degradation in the world is large agriculture.
Which are the most affected regions? Are we talking mainly about developing countries?
No, it's a global phenomenon that is affecting all countries in the world, including the United States of America, China or India or Pakistan. But the impact is much more severe in small countries, in small economies that do not have reserves, do not have insurance systems for their people. And the level of vulnerability is much higher in communities whose revenues are only based on the income they can generate from land.
Desertification doesn't exist in isolation. How does it relate to climate change, to drought, to human interventions?
Desertification is an amplifier of climate change. Climate change is an amplifier of desertification because, of course, with extreme events, you also have severe impact on land and on communities and local economies. So it's basically they are mutually interacting, and it is therefore important to have a global picture and a more comprehensive picture, just to think that you can either protect biodiversity or protect land without climate, or the other way around, will not work.
These small-scale interventions at a local level are very important, but it sounds as though it's going to need a huge push from governments, from the private sectors you just mentioned, as well as international organizations to make a real difference.
Yes, we should not discard all the efforts that are being made by the local communities day in, day out. They need much more support from governments. They also need to see less subsidies, perverse subsidies happening that are destroying the environment, and maybe using that public money that is being invested to destroy the environment to actually rebuild our economy. So it is not necessarily that we need to inject more money, but we need to better spend the money that we have.
That was Ibrahim Tiao, the Executive Secretary of the UN Convention to Combat Desertification, speaking there to UN News' Matt Wells. You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio. In our next program at the same time tomorrow, you can hear our feature, Family. I am Festus Tarawali, and do join us then. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.